You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
6 months now since Nancy Guthrie was taken from her bed in Tucson. No arrest, no named suspect, a homicide classification, but nothing to show for it. Days ago, Savannah Guthrie posted the most targeted language she's ever used in a public plea. Words that suggest something is happening behind the scenes that the rest of us may not be seeing. Savannah posted a video days ago saying, "I know you have tried to do things the right way. Help us find her. Tell us where to look for her." Why? Why this new video? That's where we're going to start this morning. We welcome your thoughts in the comment section on Substack, YouTube, wherever you're watching us. Comment away. We'll watch for those. We'll begin our conversation here. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent with us, along with, of course, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Jen, you have been the most comprehensive coverage person I know on the Nancy Guthrie case. What's your take? Why this new video from Savannah pleading, "I know you have tried to do things the right way. Help us find her. Tell us where to look for her." What's your take?
Well, I think for me, and I know a lot of my colleagues disagree. They still say these notes aren't real. They're not legitimate, meaning they're not from the abductor. That's what we mean by real.
Yeah.
I can't find one iota of information that doesn't show they're real. People like to say they're not real because they say, "Oh, it doesn't seem like what we've normally seen." Well, that's a pretty crappy reason to say they're not real. Look at the response by the FBI, and now look at exactly what you're pointing to. Another response that I believe is aided by the FBI Behavioral Analysis Unit related to the language they're having her use, particularly in response to letter two. That is an apology letter, not really a ransom letter. They don't ask for money. And that's what I think this specific language talks to, because they're apologizing. And she's trying to say, "I get you. You tried to do things the right way. And you still have a chance to basically right this wrong."
Is this a response literally to like the note from almost 6 months ago now? Or do you think there's more notes being sent behind the scenes here that we're unaware of?
I don't think there's any more notes or any more contact beyond note number two, which came in on the 6th. The reason I think it's coming out now, though, Tony, which is a very important reason. Number one, 6 month mark, but she sent this before the 6 month mark, really. The other reason is because of that Reuters report that just tried to deep six those. The Bureau came back in their strongest of any retort we've ever seen written, saying, "No, we're still looking at some of those notes," and making that crystal clear. And then all of a sudden, on the heels of that, Savannah comes out, and I think they're trying to reinforce and trying to hopefully reach somebody who knows who Porch Guy is.
Yeah, I definitely agree, Jen, with the language Savannah used, matching the language of empathy and tone that especially that second letter struck. And I'm curious about this because I know other people are weighing in on this as well, because this kind of goes to the original theory that I've been working on, and that the abduction was plan B. And I know some, and that's why I'm curious about your thoughts on that, because the language used, and I know this is probably why Reuters, I don't want to speak for them, but others are saying that they're skeptical of the first two notes. Well, I think they're skeptical because they don't fit the mold of someone who's actually using her as the primary reason and way to get money. It was an afterthought, because what they were hopefully going to do in there went sideways, plan B, because this is not written by someone who does abduction or has done it before or really planned it out. What are your thoughts on that? Seeing the full notes.
So I still have not waned in my conviction that this was a planned, targeted abduction for money. And I think that the reason the awkwardness of these notes, I'm very convinced, is they are AI driven and AI created with particular prompts, probably from somebody who is not a native English speaker. So that's where we see perished and we see US dollars and we see the sentence structure of the time and the date that they want the money. And we see the R-E-C-E-I-V-E-D received spelled wrong on just one occasion because I gets confused. And so it went I-E. That's not what normal people do. People, human people, when are there any other kinds of people? When we make it error, we repetitively do it. We spell received wrong all the time. And so I truly believe these notes are AI generated and aided, and that's why they seem so awkward.
So my follow-up to that, you know, I'm curious, how do you think they were able to then create that second note? Because if you are, say you're using AI driven for the first note, which is very kind of matter of fact, specific and a little more tactical and strategic, less empathetic, how do you go then from that and demanding money on the first one? What do you think they were doing then if they're using AI to use empathy and a sympathetic approach on the second one where they're not asking for money? Just kind of seeing how you're thinking they thought through that.
I love this question, Robin, because when I was away this week teaching in between self-defense class and shooting classes, I was toying with exactly how you do that. And it all comes down to the prompt. Make an empathetic apology note for killing the person you kidnapped.
So, and I get that. So that's my question. What do you think prompted them to take that more empathetic approach versus the first one?
Oh, because they were in a crap load of trouble when they realized she died. They could not keep her alive. They mentioned that they think it is even a heart issue. It also tells me that they weren't close to her, close enough to know she had a serious heart situation, which you would never know that about Nancy watching her on the Today Show in November or other times. I mean, she looks like an 84-year-old that gets around pretty good. Right. So now she's dead. And now if and when you get caught, you already have, as you know, this is huge in we see it in criminal matters for sure, self-serving statements. You see them, throw it out there. They'll send things to to the family members, basically apologizing for things in advance of possibly getting caught. So then you can say, listen, I meant to kidnap her. I certainly didn't want to kill her.
And one more follow-up, because I know, Tony, I'm hogging all your air.
You're fine.
So the first one, so basically what you're saying there, and I agree that they could be using that second letter for, you know, for mitigating if they're caught. Yeah. So basically what we're saying then is they gave up after the first letter. Is that typical that they'd give up, or would they try not? Wouldn't they try to get some sort of money for returning her body, for giving leads on how to get there? I mean, because it went from, if we're going on that theory, it went from 100 miles an hour to trying to get ransom for her to I completely gave up in the second letter. Is that normal, or what do you expect?
Another great question. So initially when I was really looking at the wrench possibility, meaning a more organized and a criminal group that would have gotten a mope to do this, and I'm still I'm a little bit there still, but if it's the more homegrown variety that ended up targeting her and then did this to her, I think they are terrified of getting caught, facing the death penalty. It's not worth it to them anymore. It's like, I'm out. My life is not worth it, and I'll go kidnap somebody else.
And you answered the question about, I was curious about what you thought about the wrench attack at this point, too. So you got that one in there, too. Thank you. I'm done.
If you opened up a door here with the idea that these notes were AI written, which they very well could be. We don't know that, but you're right. I mean, there's a lot of signs here that this was in some way machine created, if you will, to some degree. Not to say somebody's not behind it, saying communicate this, and then it wrote it. Here's a thought, and I'm wondering if it's been run down anywhere. Can we reach out to there's obviously a lot of AI companies out there, but there's quite a few that are commonly used. OpenAI, you know, ChatGPT, Grok, Claude. There's several within the US that I'm wondering. Just as if someone makes a search inquiry into Google, Google registers that someone searched for that at some point in time, and that can be looked back of, look, there is this amount of search history for this name or whatever at a certain time. I am wondering, and I don't know the answer to this question, if they were to reach out to one of these companies or all these companies going, look in your database of information and see where and when this specific text was created within your system, and let's figure out the IP behind it and who created it and where. Not just people, because I mean, tons of people are going to throw this into AI, but not that. Where was it? Where's the first instance of this pattern of these words, this note showing up in your system, and who generated it? There's going to be a user behind it. There's going to be an IP behind it. It may lead to a VPN. It may lead absolutely nowhere. But I'm thinking that may be a loose end where somebody who's making this note is not necessarily thinking, gee, I better do this behind a VPN.
Well, I can't imagine that the Bureau hasn't looked into this. I really just can't. That they wouldn't have issues.
There's a lot of things I couldn't imagine not happening here. But so I'm just, that's why I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm looking it up right now.
And we still don't even have billboards. But nevertheless, yeah, absolutely, Tony. Can it be done? I think it can. It would be such a needle in the haystack where you really use this is after you have your perpetrator and then you look through their, digital footprint. But this is the problem with that. We clearly are dealing with somebody that is using advanced cover-up methods, whether that's VPN, whether that's public internet, or whether that is using foreign, like Proton-type accounts. Yeah. There's all of this. And so this person, if they're savvy enough, I would be literally doing this at Starbucks, where it's Starbucks.
But you're going to get a user on that. You're going to get an IP of a device. I mean, again, it could be VPN, but I don't know. That seems to me like, I get, you're going to hide it when you're doing crypto and that sort of stuff and trying to get money. But right in the note, I don't know. I mean, that could be something that nobody thought to VPN, because you're not necessarily hiding it as you're generating it. I don't know. I'm curious. Robin, what are you finding in your research?
Yep. Over there? So it can be done. AI companies, OpenAI, ChatGPT, Anthropic, Claude, Google, Gemini, XAI/Grok, yeah. Microsoft, they all can do that. So practical limitations, retention windows matter, anonymous use is harder, companies require valid legal process, but with a subpoena, they actually can do that. So investigators believe the letter shows signs of AI generation. They can and likely would pursue warrants to major AI providers seeking prompts. And I made the request specific for a time period, so it can be done. And I would imagine, because we're talking about, sophistication as an individual, and I wholeheartedly agree with Jen. This guy is a mope, whether used by someone else or he himself. And I can't imagine there was a huge amount of subterfuge if AI was used to create those things. So it's a matter of where they created it from. But I think if they could narrow down, I would start with a 100-mile radius, and I'd start with that time period, and I'd plug it in and see what they came up with first, and then just keep expanding from there.
Are we still seeing a lot of miscommunication or not communication here between Nanos and Patel? Because you got Nanos this last week saying that Patel is misinformed and his public statements are hurting the case. I don't understand how that's even possible 6 months into this, where we have no anything. And the person who said a lot of contradictory shit was not necessarily Cash Patel. It was Nanos. What do you see going on there in terms of two agencies cohesively working together to try and get somewhere on this?
Well, at the top level, they haven't even met.
Yeah.
So they have no communication. They have no interaction. They're not sharing text messages. This is clearly a situation where, and you know, it was kind of interesting because, and I couldn't believe Nanos did this. He said something to words to this effect. You know, well, Cash Patel's a busy guy. He's got a big agency to run, like me. Like me. I've got, you know, 1,200 or so employees. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh, he may not really understand how big the bureau is.
That's half the size of New York field office when I was there.
I know. But it was, that's what he was saying. He's like, he's an important guy. And then immediate shift. Which I haven't been as hard on Nanos, I don't think, as some people have. I've really tried to give him some, you know, grace. And every time I say, okay, listen, you know, he's in charge. Let's give him some grace. And then he releases the Bitcoin address. And then he says the FBI doesn't know what they're doing. And I'm like, oh, gosh, Nanos, just stop.
You know, and I was talking to Tony and Todd before we started on this with my impression of Nanos when he came on again. And I've been the same, Jen, because, you know, for people in these positions, you want to give that grace because no one's perfect. But here's my major problem that keeps evolving more and more every time he speaks, and that is he has zero depth of field of this investigation. This is far and wide the most important investigation now in his department, if not ever in his entire career. And yet when he speaks, he does not speak with definitive language. He doesn't speak with definitive facts, details, or anything. It's very subjective, broad sweep. I mean, anytime you listen to him, it's like someone asks him a question. He's like, oh, wow, we're covering that case. I got to get on my boys to figure out what's going on. I mean, that's literally the way he comes across. A little too casual, a little too not detail knowledgeable. And I think that's what's eroding the trust on this is we're not hearing from anyone, bureau side, sheriff side, or anywhere that seems to have a definitive knowledge on what the hell is going on. I mean, we got more knowledge from watching Savannah and theorizing about at least the BAU's involved because it looks like there's some good effort put on in that letter. And that's it. Everything else is so subjective and it's very lacking of detail, I think.
How about this, you guys? How about the fact that he didn't even know Derek Colella wasn't sentenced?
Yep.
He didn't know his name.
That's what I'm talking about.
He literally threw out, he goes, that California boy, I think is how he said it. Seriously.
Yep.
He might have said fella, but I think he said that California boy found out that that people are going to be prosecuted if you send extortion letters or words to that effect. And then he said he got 10 years. I was thinking, not, he doesn't know his name. I mean, it's bad when a podcaster and a sleuth on the internet know more than the sheriff.
Yeah.
About the tentacles of this case. I am dumbfounded.
Everyone
as
does.
To how that could happen.
And that's what I like, and that's that depth of field thing. If you can't demonstrate depth of field as much as a podcaster, as much as us, I mean, Jen, you know this. Every time, not just prepping for Tony's show, I mean, it's an hour long. That's a lot of work to get depth of field of all the cases. But even when we're doing like a Fox or News Nation news hit for 4 to 6 minutes, it's hours and hours and hours of research that you're doing to make sure you have depth of field for anything that might come at you so you don't sound like an idiot like he does.
It's like he's not even trying. It's
yeah, exactly.
Like,
he's not even trying.
Oh, there's a mic. Okay, I'll go talk.
Like, I got this.
It's like just phoning in his job. Like what are we? Let me ask you this. Are we looking at this from an angle, because this is a huge case, at least publicly, in terms of interest. But people go missing every day in the United States, and the FBI gets involved, and local jurisdictions get involved, and there's not this level of coverage to it. Had had Nancy Guthrie not been Nancy Guthrie, had she just been, you know, Nancy, you know, Jones, and her daughter wasn't Savannah Guthrie, is this, you know, would we be expecting the FBI director and the local sheriff to be having a conversation? You know, I mean, or is it, are we expecting too much out of this? Not that they couldn't be doing more, but are we putting too high of a bar on this? This is going to get all of this attention, and this is going to get all of these resources. Nancy's another person in the country of a lot of missing people. Are we putting too much weight on the fact that of the attention this case is getting, just because it's a famous person, if you will?
Well, I mean, you just made the point right there. The horse done left the bar.
Yeah.
It's already to this level that you had on day very shortly after. I can't remember the exact day. The president of the United States addressing the Nancy Guthrie case after he was briefed. You have Kash Patel that's come out on three different shows that I've watched where he talks about his knowledge of the case, which is, I agree with you, it's unusual, but that's where we're at and he's involved. And so you would never expect Kash Patel to be in the weeds like he is on any of these cases. We've never seen that before. It started with Comey. It did start with Comey, I'll tell you that, getting in the weeds on cases. But Sheriff Nanos, he is the sheriff. It's on him to know all these details. And if he doesn't, put your detective up there. And did you hear there was a detective change?
No.
There's another
one. I need to put that out.
Yeah, and so I get it, and we talk about this a lot on the show with the cases that get attention and the cases that don't and the families that feel like they've been left behind and those that don't, and I get all that, but the sheriff and us don't choose what that grabs the interest of the American people, and when it does, that's their job, because part of what you do as a leader is you maintain the trust and confidence of your population, of the people at large and the nation at large, that we can keep you safe, that justice is going to be served, and the public chooses what the case they want to pay attention to, and your job is to demonstrate that you can do that, not just for this case, but that means we could do it for all the cases, and that's what he's failing on, I think, in my estimation.
Yeah. It is, and he got off on the wrong foot when he decided to go to a basketball game, like on day two. No one does that when the bell rings. Did you... that is the term my boss always used. Guys, the bell's rung. That means drop everything and you're going to spend all of your time on this until I unring the bell. I don't know if that was a phrase you heard or it's because I had a Hooverite supervisor, Dick Ludwig. But man, when the bell rings, you don't get to even go to a kid's birthday party. You're stuck working on that case until the bell unrings.
Yeah. And that does happen. And we've seen it. And I'm sorry, Tony. And we've seen it when Koberger's case, when they first made the first statements there, they're stumbling on themselves. And down in Nolan Wells's case, the sheriff, same thing, too quick to say it wasn't foul play is being ruled out. And what did both of those people do after they backtracked, they shut up, they readjusted, they reengaged, they got someone else in there. They adjusted, they learned from their mistakes, and they're marching forward to do what? Maintain a trust and confidence of the people around them, to support them, to get the leads in, and Nanos is doubling down on stupid. So, I mean, we're talking about, isn't he getting a loving critic in his life weighing in on him, you know, saying, but it doesn't matter. If you're not taking the information in, anyone, you know, the world could be telling you what to do, but if you think you got it because you're smarter than everyone else, you're not going to adjust.
Do you think Nanos is really the type of human being who has loving critics in his life? Who allows loving critics in his life? I mean, he seems to be more like, you criticize me, you're just not going to be part of my conversation.
Yeah.
That's my take on it. So, exactly. It's like, I think it's kind of, he shuts out, and this is my conjecture, shuts out anybody. He seems like he's surprised he's the sheriff every time I see him. It's like, oh, I'm the sheriff today. I better, my words matter. I'm not used to that. Like, literally the shit he said. Like, yeah, I mean, that's why it matters who you vote for. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to have our conversation.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
We're talking about the Nancy Guthrie ransom letters today from a psychological perspective. Now that they've been released in their entirety by the sheriff's department, lots of people looking at these have heard lots of different opinions onto what they are, how they were developed, what they mean, reading between the lines. And at the end of the day, it's all conjecture. But let's put our conjecture behind it. Let's put on our thinking hats, if you will, and dig deep into what is going on with the two Nancy Guthrie ransom letters that it seems the authorities believe may have some semblance of legitimacy to them, or at least they believe they came from the same two the same people, these two letters. Not necessarily for sure the people who took Nancy Guthrie, but two in a row from the same people. Does it matter? We're going to read both of the letters on the show today, and then we're going to start going into it. The Sheriff's Department finally put both the notes out in full, and the reason they gave was psychological. They're not asking the public for a location. They're asking the public to recognize a man by how he writes. Siobhan Scott is a psychotherapist with 30 years in trauma and forensic work and the author of The Mind of Mass Killers, and she's with us every single Wednesday. We always appreciate that. We're going to go through both of these line by line exactly as it was released. And then I'm going to throw it to you, Siobhan, to get your initial reaction to it. So let's begin here. This is the first letter. It says, "Hello, Savannah. We have your mother, Nancy. She is safe but scared. She will be held for ransom. And once payment is received, she will be released unharmed. We'll be holding her for a maximum of 7 days. You will need to send Bitcoin in the amount of $4 million USD before 5 p.m. on Thursday the 5th. If payment is not received, the ransom will be increased to $6 million USD, which will need to be paid by 5 p.m. on Monday the 9th. Once payment is received to the Bitcoin address below, she will be released within 12 hours of deposit to a safe drop-off location back in Tucson. If payment is not received by the last deadline on Monday the 9th at 5 p.m., she will be killed. Your mother is aware of this and her life is in your hands. It is in the best interest of everyone to have this completed as soon as possible. You will not be able to contact me from here on out. There will be no negotiation. Do not play games. Law enforcement will not be able to help you." She had a smartwatch on the floor of the front of her bed, and the white floodlight in the backyard was destroyed. That's how it signs off. That is note number one. That's what everybody has been dissecting. Siobhan, I'm going to throw it to you first. What's your overall take on this whole thing? Then we'll break it down further.
Well, I confess that when I read these notes, I was surprised. They strike me as procedural, you know, very, very clear. There's not really any emotion coming through. It could have been an HR memo, you know, that's just how it came off. It's like, here are my main points. No ranting, no rage, no anger, some things that you might typically see. But any kind of writing leaves a footprint. You know, you learn a lot about a person. So this struck me as an educated person, somebody who may write emails in their job, you know, that are sort of managerial. We don't know what kind of job, but somebody who's very comfortable with language and a good vocabulary, good punctuation. So somebody very comfortable with, you know, sending kind of these very procedural emails out. That was my initial thought.
Does that mean it's someone who maybe has done this before in terms of sending ransom demands out, or maybe someone who, you know, is sending out notes to shift workers on the line? I mean, how do you read into that?
Yeah, I can't say that there's anything that makes me think that they've done ransom notes before. Of course, that's possible. We're just speculating. But somebody that I think works in a capacity where they're firing off emails, You know, mm-hmm. These are the procedures we follow. And I mean, it could be a paralegal. It could be somebody who works in HR. It could be somebody who's got a management position in some kind of company. But it struck me as somebody who's very comfortable with language and comfortable with procedures. I did run the notes through AI detectors just to see. I got no,
I was just going to do that literally. I'm copying and pasting on this monitor over here because I was going to ask Grok, and I'll do it as we continue to go here. Robin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I did it too, and I've done multiple passes on this with AI, without AI, and the lack of consistency for pronouns, tenses, it shows most likely it is human derived, not AI derived. But there's a possibility, and this is what AI came up with, is possibility that, like many of us do now, is that you make an AI request and then you edit what you get. Yes. So there's definitely a human touch on this. What it is lacking, though, is it's lacking what you typically see in a letter for ransom. That does not fit that pattern whatsoever. And Siobhan, you made a great point there, and that is fired off. Yes, because it definitely does not look like this was the primary intent as the letter. The letter was not the primary intent because it's kind of all over the place. For a short letter, for a ransom note, it was not, does not come off cross because of the inconsistencies with the language, the procedural aspect of it. It like you said, it gives you that feeling like it was set, you know, like, oh my gosh, I got to get this letter out, so I'll just send it now. Boom. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of time spent really making mm-hmm. sure you're going to do it, because it definitely has the main intent was finance. Get something out of this house that wasn't gotten when they left.
Yeah. And the fact it was addressed to Savannah is significant. Did they look at her as the primary person with the money? Was it, as we've speculated before, was this motivated by some kind of personal grudge against her? That's not really clear. There's no real anger directed at her, but there's the interesting thing, you hold her life in your hands. Okay, so there's the deflection of responsibility. Right. No, clearly you're holding her life in your hands. It's not Savannah doing it.
And I definitely saw that too. It's not just only what's there, but it's not there, because I know a lot of people were theorizing that this was grudge, it was resentment. I didn't pick up any of that language whatsoever, especially then we haven't gotten to when we get to the second note there. This is not a letter of resentment. This was purely for financial gain. I didn't see anything else in there.
Transactional.
Transactional, yep.
You do this and we'll do that. And here's our bullet points about what we want done. Yeah.
What do you make of the USD in there? After every time they talk about dollar amounts, it's USD. I mean, are they really thinking there's going to be some sort of confusion? They're like, oh, I thought you meant pesos. We sent the wrong type of currency. Is that just regular vernacular that you'd hear more along the border, where there may be some questions sometimes about what sort of currency you're paying in, depending on what side of the line you're on?
That's an interesting thought. Certainly could be, but it also could be, again, somebody that's just practiced at writing really clear procedure, transactional mm-hmm. kinds of notes. This is what I want done, and here's specifically what I want done. Mm-hmm. So, that's a hard one.
And I'm with you on that one. I'm a maybe on that one because every time we see something, I always reverse it. What would I do in these situations? And I, as a solopreneur, I put US dollars, USD behind some transactions as well. Sure. If I'm dealing with groups and organizations that might have more of an international feel to it, I'll make sure. So yeah, it could be cross border. But I think, and I looked this up as well, when you're dealing with crypto, what I found also missing from this was time zone. So crypto acts on UTC time, and they didn't give. So when they said by 5 o'clock you need this, 6 o'clock this, what time zone? And so they made an assumption that it was actually standard time for where they were at in Arizona, and so that gave me the inclination most likely local and lack of sophistication. So they had a U.S. dollar as if an international sophistication to it, but they assumed that they knew what time zone it would be in, which, again, when you look up crypto acts on UTC time, you know, Greenwich Mean Time, basically, and not on local standard time anywhere in the States.
Great point.
Why limit yourself to a week? Why 7 days or we're going to kill her? Is it just, well, we got to move on to the next one and keep the cattle call rolling of who we're kidnapping? Or I don't know. I found that interesting, too, because I'm thinking if you have somebody and somebody wants them back and there's some sort of possibility that they will pay you, why are you setting a deadline for this? Or is that something that maybe would have been extended had she not allegedly died, according to the second letter? We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, that strikes me again as procedural, you know, okay. Management. It's like you tend to say, I want this done, and here's the timeline that it needs to be done by. And yeah, that doesn't mean that they can't change their, you know, change their strategy or change, you know, be more flexible on it. Mm-hmm. But it sort of struck me that, you know, when I've written demand letters, I haven't written any of these kind of demand letters.
But when you've kidnapped people, Siobhan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But when I've written something, you know, I had to sue a contractor once who just was not following through. I mean, I don't think I actually sued them, but I threatened to sue them. And I gave a time zone. Mm-hmm. If I don't hear from you by, mm-hmm. this is what I'm going to do. And so it could just be, you know, you're trying to be clear and precise and you want to see results and you don't want it dragged out, because perhaps the longer it's dragged out, the greater the odds that you're going to get caught.
She is safe, but scared. That's an interesting one. What is your take on that? She is safe, but scared. Telling her daughter he'll kill her, and he stops to say the woman is frightened. That line really isn't doing anything for him. It doesn't speed up the money, and it doesn't add pressure. I mean, is he calming Savannah down? Like, is she's okay? Or is that a reflection on himself or herself, or whoever's doing this?
It did strike me as when you have a tremendous attunement with your loved one, you don't want to think of them as scared. And mm-hmm. so I think there is, it does add a layer of emotional pressure and intensity. She's suffering. She's not having a good time. She's frightened. And with all her health problems, you know, Savannah was well aware of, apparently these people were aware to some degree that she had health problems, and look at her age. The fact that she's under this kind of pressure and is scared, I think that would push me to really act quickly. You don't want your loved ones scared.
Yeah, definitely psychological pressure, lever of influence there. I'll tell you that those first three sentences are, I keep going back to it, she will be held for ransom. That, you know, will be held, you know.
Isn't she currently being held for ransom?
Yeah, I know. The language in there, it goes back to what Siobhan was saying. It was just fired off, not a lot of thought. You know, so both my first impressions, then you throw it through the Grok analyzer, it comes across and is written as a plan B. This was not plan A. Plan A was go in the house, get something of value, and cash out. Something goes side, and the language in the letter, again, it's never anything's 100% of anything unless you ask the person, they tell you. But all the language indicators in this are saying this was plan B. The way it was written, the way it's delivered, definitely first rodeo when it comes to doing ransom, because this is not how any ransoms are ever given for people that actually the primary intent was to get money by taking a human being and holding them until I get money. Because mm-hmm. again, that's boom, 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 boom. It stays transactional. It stays quick. It makes it easy. This is what you do. It's very authoritative. In, out, sign of life, proof of life, out. None of that is here on this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The very end of it, letter one, where she had a white smartwatch on the floor at the foot of the bed, and the white floodlight in the backyard was destroyed. That line there. Obviously, that's someone who knows that they're going to be looking for some sort of proof that this is legit, that this is someone who was actually there and not just somebody making a ransom demand. They're aware that that's going to be in the consideration. And they thought that that was going to be enough of the carrot on the stick to be taken seriously. I guess why wasn't it taken seriously? Or should it have been taken seriously? Or is it just a big nothing burger? Robin, I know you early on, and I think I have too, have said, well, I mean, you could make some random guesses at this just with a little bit of research. But I don't know. I mean, Siobhan, what's your thought on that end of it first?
That was really what tipped the scale for me into, you know, my idea that this was legitimate, because I think particularly the watch on the floor, it's like, that's not something you could just make a guess about and hit it.
I'm tipping it towards, I think this person either was the one in the house or has knowledge of the person, you know, secondhand coming from in the house because of that. What was interesting, because I'm really focusing, words kind of jump out when they kind of strike me. The word destroyed was interesting. The floodlight in backyard was destroyed. So the first thing that enters my mind, all right, what destroyed that? Was it a stick? Was it a hands? Is there DNA on it? Is there shards? I mean, so the word destroyed, it wasn't broken, disabled, removed. You know, there's a lot of other adjectives you could use, but the word destroyed really jumped out at me, because destruction says that something happened to it intentionally. I want to discover what that was, because there might be also evidence there. But that's why I'm leaning towards these were most likely legit. I think law enforcement was and still is reticent to say they're legit from the sense of legit ransom notes, because again, for all the reasons I'm saying, and Siobhan is too, it doesn't ring true of a ransom as primary objective. And I know there's others, including, you know, Jen, that says this was the primary objective. Okay, I live in the world of maybe on all this is all open, but I'm just saying the language here, and this is why the behavioral team was reacting as if they were real. That's why they, from our conjecture, was working with Savannah to, you know, put out responses to these. So I think it's a strange mix on here. I think the person has either first or secondhand knowledge of the things in the house, because it is, there's a connection, but I do not think the primary of the person that wrote this was the ransom.
I mean, there's a lot of ways. I mean, we got to think of this too. It's not just as black and white of, well, the person that wrote this clearly did it because they had knowledge of where that there was a floodlight out and that the Apple Watch was on the ground. There's a lot of people who would have had knowledge of that, and a lot of people who I'm sure would have told people about that, because it wasn't necessarily like secret held back information at that moment in time. You had a lot of investigators combing that property. They were out. I mean, there was so much so that we had, 14 rubber gloves strewn around the property. And they were like, whoops, that was the FBI or somebody dropping them on the ground on an active crime scene. So you had that level of sloppiness going on. I would also guess that if you have that level of sloppiness of just, whoops, the gloves are falling all around here, and now we're thinking it might be the killers, might have the same sloppiness with words, might have the same sloppiness with information initially in this case. I don't think it's that far of a cry that somebody would have said, yeah, and that floodlight was destroyed, and they found her watch on the ground, and somebody heard that, and somebody thought, I might try and make a demand letter making them think it's Nancy Guthrie. Let's see if it goes to the crypto wallet. Some sick idiot that doesn't realize they could be caught for doing such a thing. I don't know. Is that too many degrees of separation for that to be a potential reality in a case like this? I'm going to go to Robin on that one first from an investigative standpoint.
It adds a level of complexity. And every time you add one more level of complexity, I think it diminishes probability.
Yeah.
Because it's always easier than that. But that's why I use the same phraseology. Whoever wrote this had either first or secondhand knowledge from somewhere of a few details that I found a little too random to be just thrown out there like an AI generated kind of randomness. I mean, I would have picked something else. I would have picked what she was wearing to bed or something like that. Or I wouldn't have put the Apple Watch actually on the ground. So I tend to think that's actually probably legit. Observation by someone passing along to someone else, just who those people are is the interesting thing. And also just looking at the timeline, last seen. So first ransom note was one day after she was reported missing, about 2 days after she was last seen. So there's plenty of time in there. It is within the window, on the outside edge of the window of ransom notes typically being received if they are legit, mm-hmm. but definitely enough time for word of mouth from different individuals. I haven't looked at who had actually access to that house that could have done that before then. Hopefully law enforcement has looked at that, but with Nanos, you never know.
What are your thoughts, Siobhan?
Layer of complexity upon layer of complexity, and it's sure possible that somebody spilled that information. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a hard one to call.
Let's get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, everybody, on ransom note number one. Why don't you go ahead and weigh in there? We, of course, read the comments, and we'll continue our conversation there. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com, SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, guys. Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. head on over to spinquest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.